Hello and welcome to episode 5 of the Two Tones. Tony DeBolfo.
G'day, Tone. How are you?
Tony Moclair here. Lot to get through today. Tone, the NAB Challenge Game 3 for the Blues. Let's start with that because I thought it was a terrific game.
Look, it was. It had its ebbs and flows, didn't it? And certainly, I guess what we saw from the Carlton team were, you know, patches of really good play interspersed with moments where maybe, you know, the effort tapered it somewhat.
Yeah, but that'd be fitness, wouldn't it?
Maybe. But I think maybe it's...
Or experience.
Experience or lack thereof. But, you know, at our absolute best, it was magnificent to see... Carlton really put it to Sydney, as they did for a period of the initial game against Hawthorn. Mm. And, you know, Carlton's best is really, really good to watch. The big issue for the team this year will be, you know, how long they can sustain it, not only from quarter to quarter, but game to game. That's going to be the real test. But I'm the vibe I get, you know, just speaking to people that were there, who saw the game, is that they're really buoyed by the way the players are going about it. Mm. They ask for nothing more than an honest effort. Mm. And it's fair to say that we're getting that from this group under Brendan Bolton right now. So I think that's where the signs are so very, very promising.
Well, if you look at the best players for Carlton, there's some new names or names that don't... or maybe haven't figured prominently amongst the best over the years. Well, Kerridge, for example, continues to impress. Nick Graham, I mean, when you've got opposition supporters saying to you, I noticed him, he's a really good player, how long has he been at the club, that sort of thing, that's a real pat in the back, I think.
It is, and Graham's such a prolific possession gatherer too. You know, he seems to always get where the ball is, and I think that's an enormous advantage to have as a midfielder. He seems to have that happy knack of getting possession.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, now that he's been, what, 2 or 3 years at the place, we're starting to really see a seasoned player emerge. You know? And like you say, Tony, with Kerridge, you know, we saw amazing... moments of Cripps in full flight. You know, the way he was, you know, he was so seemingly effortlessly clearing the ball, you know, just before he was putting cotton wool early in the third quarter. And then, you know, Blaine Bowkirst, another one who's making steady progress. You know, we're starting to see a lot of players really, you know, I guess, stake their claim. And Carlton can only benefit from that.
Well, Jakob Vytering continues to impress. So you look at that between... I mean, obviously it's early days, but if you, you know, look, you take your positives where you can see them. Between Kerridge and Vytering, that's exciting that it speaks to the quality of the pickups that the club has made.
Yes, true. Yeah. Very true. And we were talking off air a moment ago, weren't we, about, you know, that first appearance against Essendon where Vytering, you know, made such a heady, you know, impression.
He just looks at home out there.
He looks so at home. And we said, didn't we, you know, about, you know, that Bruce Doole, the great Bruce Doole, was watching on from the Gardner stand, and what he must have thought is that, you know, that player that just delivered week in, week out for years at centre-half back, what he must have thought of a player like Vytering with his presence, his poise, and, you know, the fact that he didn't get flustered at all any time the ball came his way. So there's a lot to like about where the club is going on the backs of young players like this who are, you know, starting out on their careers.
Well, I only say this because I spoke to a diehard Sydney Swans fan. This is Peter Grubby Stubbs, if you know him, who I have the pleasure of knowing. He's a great bloke. And he was...
Grandson of Dave Crone, former Carlton footballer and president too, by the way.
Oh, really? He's been very quiet about that. Oh, okay. He's not always forthcoming with praise for the Carlton Football Club, strangely enough, but just was just acknowledged the effort that the team had made, that that it was a fair dinkum game, yes, and it was no easy victory for the Swans.
Which just goes to show, Tony, respect gained is respect earned.
Mm.
And, you know, the only way that the players under Brendan Bolton will earn respect is if they do the right things, you know, and do them for as long as possible, because we need to be in games, you know, and I guess what we're seeing at the moment is some, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, it's spasmodic somewhat, you know, where, you know,
Yes.
So, you know, I mean, I'm sure that it's an area of the game that the players can and will work on. And, but the what we've seen of Carlton so far, spasmodically, is really, really good, you know, and let's hope they can, you know, up the ante there in terms of their, you know, their collective output in games and really start to challenge teams.
Well, we've seen the genesis of that in The Journey, which is what we're going to talk about now. Half-hour documentary, fly-in-the-wall documentary, I guess, about the reset of a football club. It was on Fox Footy the other night.
Yes.
It is a remarkable bit of documentary making, because the media unit here at the club were granted unprecedented access. That said a lot, but this really was. And you get a warts-and-all portrait of Brendan Bolton, and he is a truly fascinating character. How he is inspiring the people around him, Neil Craigs, the players, that sort of thing. What stood out from The Journey to you, Tony DeBelfo?
Look, there were so many things, and I suppose, you know, to start, we have to commend Darcy Muller. I know Luca Ganano worked hard on it, and also Richard Carl took that magnificent footage on location at the Silvani household the night Jack's name was read out.
That's awesome.
There were so many elements to this documentary. It's hard to actually pick one or two highlights. There were plenty, and it was riveting television. There's no doubt about it. The media department should be commended highly for this, as should the football department for allowing unfettered access. And I said to Luca early in the week, what's fantastic about this piece of film is that it's now in the can, and I think as time goes on, the years go on, maybe we look back on this as a pivotal moment in Carlton history, and you know, maybe we look at it along we regard it in the same breadth as the Barassi cross from Melbourne way back in the end of 64, and you know, you talked about Brendan Bolton and the impact that a person can have on the place. Well, if you see that film, you get to realise what impact Brendan Bolton has already had on the not only the players but on everyone connected with the Carlton club. And again, I'm reminded of the story that I heard when Barassi came into Princess Park. It was like he flicked the switch on the place, and it just sort of the place took off. And I think that's what we see. We see the influence of a man on a group of people. We see a group of young people that are willing to learn and are willing to be taken on the journey. Mm. And what we see, I think, is buy-in from everyone connected with the club on where the club is trying to go. So in terms of highlights, look, you know, there were so many. You know, we mentioned the Silvani moment at the day of the draft. And, you know, we saw, you know, the group of players led by Vittering down in Hobart in Tasmania, I think. The leadership that he took amongst his group of young men who have all got this thing in common in that they were drafted together and are starting out together. So what can I say? It was a magnificent video, and it's tremendous that it's on record now for all to see, because I think as time goes on, the value of that behind the scenes account of what is happening at Carlton is only going to prove even more significant.
You mentioned the sleep deprivation exercise, which is actually an SAS selection tool. When they try to whittle down the number of people to actually get into the regiment, one of the things they put them through is sleep deprivation.
Yes.
And it was he just so naturally stood up.
Yes.
And this is the thing. I mean, I know I've said this a couple of times, but there's emerging leaders at this club, yes, which is really genuinely exciting.
And when that team photo was taken of the draftees to see him look down at the Guernsey,
yeah,
you know, and to really study it and immerse himself in what the letter CFC actually meant. You know, I think for anyone seeing that vision, you can't help but be inspired to see A, Jakob Vittering wearing the Guernsey, and B, almost seeing his mind ticking over as he started to contemplate what wearing the dark navy blue Guernsey actually means to him. And I thought that was an incredible bit of footage. The other moment that stood out was the meeting of minds at that restaurant in St Kilda.
Oh, how about that?
Chris Judd and Paddy Cripps. Yes. You know, and I think what was great about that offered an insight into Chris Judd.
What, his fashion choices, the jacket?
Yeah, there was it looked
he looked like a consigliere or something, didn't he?
He did. I don't know if he was he stirring his espresso with his teaspoon. I'm not sure.
He was about to make Cripper an offer he couldn't refuse.
Yeah, there were shades of Don Finucci, I suppose, with that. But I think what was magnificent about it was how totally measured Judd was and uncomplicated he was in trying to impart his knowledge on a young fellow like Patrick Cripps. You know, not to look too far ahead or to overanalyze things, and just be yourself and look at the challenges in front of you and deal with them as they come along. Judd, he didn't overanalyze or over dramatize anything, and it was magnificent to see, you know, the mind of a play of Chris Judd's character, you know, and what Patrick Cripps obviously got out of it, you know, and it was just a great thing to see, and it was lovely to see Chris Judd giving a bit back like that, wasn't it?
Well, it was, and no doubt Cripper, who has the job, would have paid for Juddy's coffee, because Juddy is unemployed, of course. So good on you, Cripper, there. But what stood out for me was Judd's observation. I never really thought about this, but people generally underestimate their abilities in the short term and overestimate them in the long term.
Yes.
So the thrust of what he was saying to Cripper is basically you worry about the things you can control. And that was his message. Mm. And I think it was just basically saying don't get caught up in criticism or external criticism or that sort of stuff. And just for me, I thought that it's a great way of keeping Cripper grounded in what is going to be a year where he gets a lot of attention.
Yes.
Just on and off the field. And so to have that kind of mentoring relationship is a great credit to the club and a great credit to Chris Judd.
Very true. And if you think of it from Cripps' perspective, isn't it magnificent that, you know, in times of duress or, you know, whatever obstacles service along the way, that he can turn to someone like Judd for advice?
Mm.
You know, that,
not
that's
fashion advice.
No. The last time I saw a jacket like that, I reckon Dick Pratt wore to Launceston. It was sky blue number that you know, I could recall donning the shades to sort of protect my eyes from the glare that it was giving off. But it was extraordinary outfit. But there you go. There you go. Who are we to poke fun at the great man's fashion sense?
The other thing that you get from the journey is, well, Brendan Bolton's just absolute dedication and just his love for what he does.
Yes.
I know we've mentioned the pivotal moment in his life where he dropped his dad off, or his dad dropped him off at work, and he realised his dad went to work at a job that he didn't love. But what you get with Bolton is total immersion in the job, in the sense of purpose that he has and how that radiates. I mean, there's great footage of him in the, I don't know what it's called, the briefing room or whatever downstairs, and you can hear a pin drop when he talks. And he makes the point to, I can never pronounce his name, Villaggio Rainbow?
Yes, Dylan Villaggio Rainbow,
Just
the warrior?
Yes, well, comparing Jammo with his 140 games.
Yes.
And but says to Mr. Rainbow, and I thought this was a very interesting point, that you get the sense with Bolton that no man will be left behind. Mm,
very true, and I remember saying previously, you know, with my personal observations of Brendan Bolton is where you meet people in life, footy in life, who are passionate, he's fanatic
yeah.
about his football, you know, and yeah, you can just see that just basically, you know, pouring off him, you know, in particularly in those scenes, you know, in the theatreette where, yeah. And I think what was interesting in that bit of footage too, Tone, reflecting on it, was how on edge the players actually were, that, you know, they were hanging off every word Brendan Bolton was uttering, and you could also tell just reading the, you know, the just reading the faces of the players, that they knew they were being challenged, and they were, and you know, they were waiting, or they were trying to think of the right response to the questions that were being put to them by Brendan Bolton. And there's no doubt he's got them thinking totally different thoughts about their preparation, about, you know, their very existences as league footballers, you know, in the jungle, and he's really thrown it to him, and I think that's what comes through in the video. At least that was what I thought.
Well, there's the old Machiavelli line: "It's better to be feared than loved."
Yes.
So you know, maybe he's channeling a bit of that, and yes. that might not be a bad thing. But you do certainly get the sense that they're on tenterhooks when he's talking.
Yes.
That there's a cost for not listening.
Yes.
And that that just reflects that whole kind of buy-in thing. Yeah. I like what he said too. What he said to them. When we go out and train, we kick the ball around a bit and we warm up, and that's all really nice. When the siren goes, how much time do you have to warm up after the umpire bounces the ball? You don't have any. You've got to be ready to go.
Yep.
When the siren goes. And so I got a sense that, yeah, they're being absolutely primed for combat from the second that they hit the field, and that's a good feeling.
That's true, and here we are. What, the time clock's ticking. We're a week out now, aren't we? To round one, and you're right. You know, when the ball is bounced in anger, there's going to be a war of attrition waged, and the players have to be ready for it, because this is the world of AFL football, isn't it?
Well, it is, and especially if Richmond can manage to field more than 15 players. It should be a real game. Now, speaking of, Murph is pushing for selection for round one, which is, having had a very quiet NAB season.
Well, I guess they've taken a softly approach with him. You know, we haven't seen him yet in the pre-round one preparations, but, you know, we're reliably informed that he's ready to go, and we'll lead them out against the Tigers come round one. Well, he's simply got to be ready, doesn't he?
Yeah. You know,
it all starts Thursday night, and he'll be cherry ripe, ready to go, and as will, you know, the 22 that take to the field. I think it's really starting to get exciting, and thinking about it from a player's perspective, you know, it'd be interesting to know at what point the nerves start to kick in. And the challenge for all of them, you know, with particularly the younger players or the players that are on the cusp of making their senior debuts for Carlton, how do they control that nervous energy leading into the game? So the spotlight will be on round one. The world will be watching the MCG on Thursday night. And, you know, let's just hope the boys can measure up to the task, because it would be great to begin the year on the right note.
Well, if you're invested in the outcome, and I would say if you're invested in the journey, and that title is a very kind of freighted one, because that's essentially what we're on. And your definition of success, I know from my point of view, definition of success is not necessarily victory. It's just I don't want to see capitulation.
No.
I know I speak for a lot of people, you just want effort, that you just want the team to die trying.
Yes, and that's right. And I think that's what's heartened so many supporters over the rehearsals, so to speak, that we have seen honesty of performance, and that's all you ask. That's all you ask from the players. At the end of the day, if you can walk away saying your team gave it its all...
Yeah.
You can't ask for anything more than
that. No, exactly. Now, just on the Sydney game, Tony DiBolfo, Daisy suspended for a week, hitting a former teammate. Was there ever niggle between those guys here?
I'm not sure what the history was there, but I must admit, when I saw it, I thought that Jerry Laidlaw had probably milked it for all it was worth. Gee, you really? Know, but there you go. Maybe Daisy gets a week for stupidity.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you just in this day and age, you can't, you know, you can't get sucked into these things.
Yeah.
You know, and
didn't Laidlaw do psychology? Did I get that right? Diagon. I always get those two confused. Right. No, it was Diagon who was doing psychology.
Yeah.
I thought maybe you just, you know, the rope of dope was it just a bit of a, something you know, he's learning at university.
You know, you walk away, don't you, Tony?
Well, you should.
You walk away,
the big man should.
You know, but then again, you know, maybe I'm selling Dale Thomas short because, you know, Brendan Bolton is on record to say he wants his players playing on the edge.
Mm.
You know, and okay, maybe Daisy did overstep the mark, but perhaps we can't be too critical because maybe what we're seeing is a change of mindset here, and you know, you're going to have full-on competitors running out in the dark navy blue goons. That's what you want.
Well, Daisy has copped it this week in the media for Kevin Bartlett has had a real go at him, saying he's not in Carlton's best 22, and then there was an article in the Herald Sun yesterday, just a comment about the deal, the $3.5 million deal. How do you think Daisy will go throughout the course of the year? What do you, because he's got to have that year, doesn't he? Where he's got to have the year that we remember him by.
Very true, and I'm sure a player of his experience and understanding of the game, you know, understands and appreciates where he's at in terms of his career. So yeah, you're very right in what you're saying. You know, this is a massive year for Dale Thomas, and indeed for a lot of Carlton players for different reasons. But yeah, I mean, he's given himself a pretty good chance at having, by and large, completed an injury-free pre-season. Mm. That's got to give him some sort of opportunity to make a real impact. You know, I mean, his year was crueled opening minute last year, you know, and it's such a shame, the suspension, when you think, you know, this was the game 12 months ago that he went down, and how he must have been looking forward to the opportunity just to prove him wrong.
Mm.
We're going to have to wait a week, but I'm sure, you know, Dale Thomas, being the pro that he is, will come back and come back hard. But, you know, it's an enormous challenge.
Well, look forward to that. It could be one of the many great stories in Carlton in 2016. Now, we've covered off the form of Nick Graham and Blaine Burkhurst.
Yes.
Still, really, can we... We have some of the most unpronounceable names in the AFL. I mean, why is that? And what does the list manager do about that?
Well, that's a very good question. Maybe we revert to nicknames, or maybe we go to the numbers. You know, do we revert to the... To the Guernsey numbers, well, just to
which reminds
that
me
might,
of a,
that might pose more problems.
Well, somebody once said that they swear this is true. There was a Melbourne supporter at the MCG barracking for her team, going, "Go Melbourne numbers 1 through 13."
Well, it seals the deal in one utterance, doesn't it?
It does,
you know, you've got the whole team covered in, you know. Yeah. Jack Dyer used to refer to them, Melbourne supporters, he's va, he would describe them as. He had that.
With their arms reaching up like giant testicles.
That was it. But, yeah, that's a great line, isn't it? Great, one of the great football lines. I hadn't heard that one before.
There's many of them. Now, before we go, Tone, you've got an in memoriam.
I do indeed, for the late Ivan Raut, president of the Carlton Football Club. You talk about interesting names. Ivan was the son of a Norwegian-born father and an English-born mother. Grew up in Yarram, born in 1920, and he died last Wednesday at the age of 95, 2 weeks shy of his 96th birthday, and he was farewelled at a funeral service on Wednesday. Yesterday he was farewelled. And what was interesting about his life, to tell the listeners a little bit, in 1934 he commenced schooling at the age of 14, quite late, because he was working with his father on a farm in Yarram. And yet, unfortunately, through the Depression, because of the Depression, he was pulled out of school 10 weeks into that year.
Ugh.
So he never really had an opportunity academically. He followed his father into the hotel trade later on. Actually ran the Rising Sun Hotel in Lygon Street for many years.
Oh, really?
And was a City of Melbourne councillor.
Yep.
Hence Carlton's interest in securing him to the committee under George Harris's watch in the end of 64. they were obviously instrumental in getting Ron Barassi across to Carlton, that committee, the Progress Party as it was known. And what we saw was a tribute to a man who was not only involved with the City Council, the football club, Princes Hill High School in the area, but also Mount Royal Hospital. His director helped a lot of people, you know, that needed help. That was probably his greatest legacy, as his son Richard mentioned in the eulogy. But a man that should be remembered, and this is an historical fact, the only person in Carlton history to be a life member of the football club, the cricket club, and the Carlton Social Club.
How about that?
That was the legacy of Ivan Raut, a president for 3 years, from 1975 through 7. May he rest in peace.
Indeed. Thank you for that, Tony DeBolfo. This has been the Two Tones, Episode 5. We will catch you next week when we preview round 1 of the 2016 AFL season.